I'm Dr. Jennifer Edwards, and welcome to the Resilient Vet Podcast, Mind and Body Strategies for Success. While you're here, we would love for you to hit subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts so that you never miss an episode. Today, we're going to be kicking off a two-part series on a topic that personally I think about a lot and something that comes up almost every single time I'm working one-on-one with one of my clients. And we're talking about the idea of saying no. Now, not how to say no, not the scripts of what do you do when you want to say no. We're going to go to a little bit of a deeper place, the identity level, where the real work actually lives and actually makes a difference. So part one today is about the inner game. Like, why is it so hard? Where does that even come from? And what is it actually costing you? I invite you to visit my website, drjenniferedwards.com, and download a free resource that I've created for you called The Wired to Say Yes Self-Assessment. It's a guided self-reflection tool that walks you through identifying your preferences, your deal breakers, and the beliefs that you hold that have been running the show in the background. I've been in the veterinary profession for a long time. I'm a veterinarian, and now I am a certified leadership coach and a speaker. And as somebody who, I can admit, spent a lot of my life having a hard time saying no and often saying yes when I didn't mean it, this is a topic near and dear to my heart. My work now lives at the intersection of conscious leadership and self-awareness, and I'm the founder of the Core Element Framework for Leadership and Personal Transformation. I would love to introduce my co-host, Aaron Shaw. Aaron, tell us about yourself.
Well, thank you for being here, and thank you for this intro. This is it's going to be a really interesting topic today. My name is Aaron Shaw. I am an occupational therapist, a certified hand therapist and strength coach and lover of all things human physiology and performance. And I run a coaching and consulting business for vet professionals and vet teams to help them thrive and really kind of build physical and emotional durability. Stating the obvious, vet medicine is a fulfilling but also very challenging space to be, both physically and emotionally. I think today's topic that Jennifer is going to lean into is going to be a great one, because I think this is it's obviously very pertinent to veterinary medicine, but as an occupational therapist, which also we have our own challenges in saying no and maybe setting boundaries and kind of taking care of ourselves in the same sense that veterinary professionals do. I'm looking forward to learning a little bit today with you guys. So let's think about what when we say, when you're talking about, you know, I can't say no, and I've heard this before, I may or may not have actually said this myself before, like this, the idea like, I can't say no, or maybe like feeling like I'm not supposed to say no, like it's a bad thing. It's really tough in this profession, you know, and it's easy to kind of throw the profession under the bus, like it's the schedule, it's the profession, it's the demands, but you're saying it starts someplace else entirely, perhaps. So where could this sense of obligation actually start?
It's a really good question, because you're right. Especially in veterinary medicine, there is a lot, rightfully so, a lot of focus on the parts of the profession that don't work, right? And the part, and what I mean by don't work for the support of the well-being of the people in the profession. When it comes to having trouble saying no, however, it's really more of a human issue before it's necessarily a veterinary issue. And just like what you mentioned, in occupational therapy, you see the same thing. Because most of these things within us and where we get stuck, it starts in childhood. If you think about it, you probably can know that you know somebody who doesn't have difficulty saying no, right? So like, why is it so easy for them where it may not be so easy for us, right? So that alone shows us that it's not solely due to the environment as the sole cause. So we enter the profession, right? Like we go to veterinary school and we bring stuff with us. We bring, you know, ideas and beliefs from childhood, and we take what we bring and we add it to everything that is put upon us in the profession. So it almost becomes a bit of a perfect storm. Very often in childhood, so we go way back in time, we're with our families and our schools and whatever organizations we're involved with, we are often taught that worth and approval are linked to things like performance, usefulness, compliance. So being good meant saying yes. And then a lot of us have this helper identity, right? That's what draws us to a helping profession in the first place, of which veterinary medicine, of course, is one, right? So we already have a foundational story that our value comes from being useful, from fixing things, from alleviating suffering. So we're drawn to a profession such as this. And that's kind of where it begins. So it's not like we walked into vet school orientation and then all of a sudden found out that we are helpers and that we like to say yes to things, right? So, you know, people pleasing, as we call it, saying yes when we may mean no, it's not a flaw, right? And there are times it actually works for us, right? But what happens is we started out in life as a bit of a strategy for getting by, for being accepted, for excelling. And then it starts to turn into almost a default way that we operate, a default way that we show up every day. And we start to really not have a lot of choice in the matter. So the reason I bring this up is because, again, there is a lot of focus on what's not working in the profession, and we do need to continue focusing there. But if we keep pointing at the profession as being the cause or the reason that we experience some of these things, we're going to stay stuck. Because while we can maybe work on aspects of our career or our job, none of that is going to change what's happening kind of deep in the core within each of us that's leading us to this type of behavior.
Yeah, it's a good point. And it's timely that we're talking about this. Just last night, my wife works on faculty at veterinary hospital and veterinary school, and a new batch of interns came in yesterday. And so it's funny, the things that we talk about on this podcast, and I get to hear kind of secondhand of where she's at, and new students coming through, residents coming through, and kind of hearing that evolution. And I think, oh yeah, we Jennifer and I were talking about this on the Resilient Vet podcast. So this is interesting. So let's say, what happens when somebody brings this wiring? We have some younger people that are coming in, they're already maybe pre-wired a certain way, that helper identity, that maybe that need for approval that have probably to some degree served them fairly well up to now, perhaps. What happens when they walk into this veterinary pipeline? What happens when they get into the system? What happens next?
Yeah, well, the pipeline really starts with the selection process, right? Like, you spend all the years in high school and college, preparing yourself to have a good application, to be a good candidate. And then that process of getting selected to enter veterinary school is where the profession first kind of digs its little claws into those personality traits and, gets a hold of that wiring and starts to amplify it. In order to get into veterinary school today, a person really needs to be exceptional, right? So the GPA, the extracurricular activities, the experiences they may have had, the letters of recommendations, like all of it, right? Like, we have to come with this package, this resume already before we even start professional school. And often what has set in years earlier is the, I will do whatever it takes. Like, I'm going to vet school. This is my goal. Nose to the grindstone. Here I go. And so saying no doesn't really even occur to us as an option, right? It's more of a liability. I cannot say no to any and all of these things that I have to do to get selected. So fast forward, we get selected and now we're in school. And now it starts, right? Now we're near and surrounded by and in classrooms with all of the other people who also were exceptional and also were able to get into veterinary school, right? So the bar that we were living up at this high level just got raised again. And so now you got to keep up, right? You can't say no. You're going to fall behind. You're going to stand out in the bad way. You don't want to be the difficult one. And the sheer, gosh, I think back to vet school, the sheer volume of what is required to know, to be able to do the medicine, and it just keeps advancing. It's honestly, it's kind of mind-blowing. And so again, continues that nose to the grindstone mentality. I'm gonna shut up and cooperate. You know, it's just say yes, do what I'm told, do what I gotta do, because it becomes about survival at this point. So we're not anymore really in ambition. I mean, we are like thinking ahead to that residency, that internship, whatever, but it's really a form of survival. So we get through, right? So 4 years goes by, we get through, then we graduate. And then after all the studying and learning, we come to find out that we know nothing. and the real learning begins, and we go, oh boy, okay. And then the pressure comes, right? So we have the job, we have the expectations, the clients, we have all of this pressure now that's come upon us as a new grad. And again, we start to now marry our self-worth with knowledge and skill and the ability to now figure it out in the moment, right? And so we often in this profession are a little bit on the perfectionist side, right? Because we're selecting for that. Well, now, guess what? Perfection is not possible, especially in vet med. And we may have a patient die. We get a diagnosis wrong, or we just miss it completely. We didn't even think of it, right? Complication happens after surgery. We put a bandage on too tight and the leg comes back all swollen, whatever. I mean, the list can go on and on and on. Of extraction site dehisses, right? And that's all reality. That not only is going to happen, but even before it happens, there's a fear, a big fear of it happening. Like, oh my gosh, what if I fill in the blank? I harm an animal. You know, something happens, right? And then there's the fear of judgment from the client, judgment from our colleagues, client reactions, board consequences, right? So imagine just like pressure upon pressure upon pressure building up, you know, standing up and saying no and really thinking about what works for us in that moment may not be, you know, at the forefront of what's going on. So the profession asks a lot of us, but it doesn't just ask a lot. It's actually selecting for people who are already inclined to just give everything and to just give and give and give. And then that identity that it's selected for is reinforced every step of the way throughout the career. And so the result is what we end up with is that accommodation and overperformance, which I think a lot of veterinarians can resonate with, it becomes really the safest way to be, the safest identity to inhabit. I'm just going to, you know, smile and say yes. And so when no, it almost becomes a threat to our identity, right? It's not just job security, which it may be, but it literally starts to threaten how we see ourselves, like who we see ourselves as being in this world. And that's hard to overcome.
Yeah, this whole conversation is already pretty heavy because I think that it's in some ways it's setting some people up, I hate to say to fail, but maybe not to thrive as well as they could. You know, it's almost like this mismatch of reinforcing behaviors and decisions that ultimately are going to lead to, you know, emotional weight, you know, and stress that. Like that's the path that seems almost like the path well-traveled, too well-traveled in vet med. So it's a lot more complicated than just saying, you know, I don't want to, or just saying like, learn to say no, right? Like again, yeah. you mentioned the scripts. Like if I just read these two sentences on, I'm going to set a boundary and say no, everything is fine. Like it's way more complicated than that. And especially anytime you talk about identity, I think that's a big, heavy concept to think about. So what would that actually feel like for somebody? What's that feel like on the inside for them?
Yeah. And those are all really good points. And I agree with you. And I think that's part of the reason why people are burning out. Right. And this is heavy. And often, in my opinion, not talked enough about at this level, right? So we hand people strategies to overcome an identity that's not working for them, right? Because it's not true identity. It's fabricated. It's false identity that we live inside of. It doesn't work for us. And so when, like I said, it starts to become a threat to that identity, because if who I am, if who I see myself as is the person who shows up, figures it out, never leaves anyone hanging, then saying no when that doesn't serve me challenges the whole story that I have about myself. And so if I do say no, which sometimes might happen, you know, everybody at some point just has to, it may be followed by feelings of guilt, shame, anxiety. In some cases, honestly, and I remember feeling this way, even a low-grade panic. Like I remember even as a practice owner, how hard it was sometimes to say no to my employees, right? You'd think, well, you're the boss. Well, that doesn't matter. I still wanted to be liked, right? So there would almost, if I had to like put my foot down about something, I would literally have sometimes anxiety about it. Like this is real. This is real experiences. And people-pleasing is very much tied to our fears, right? So why do we want to people-please? Why don't we just say no? I mean, it's not that, it's just one syllable. Like it's not that hard, technically, right? But when there's fear behind it, that is a very big driving force. And we're afraid of not being seen as a team player, about being talked about behind our back. You know, one of the biggest human needs is to be included in a group. And, you know, the fear of being cast out of the team or not being included, being labeled as difficult, being passed over for a position or a promotion, and most of all, being let go. So when we provide somebody with what I would call a reasonable no to something, like somebody made a request, it didn't work, we nicely and politely, we say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that right now. When that is followed by guilt, that is really important data. And I say data because sometimes when we experience an unpleasant emotion, it is actually one of the most opportune times to explore that and learn about ourselves, if we can do so from a space of curiosity and not judging. And we've talked about that in a previous episode as well. So it's not an indication that the no was wrong, right? Most likely it was not wrong, because if you came up with a no, even when no is difficult, it probably really was the right thing to say. But the guilt that follows very well could be an indication of beliefs that we have about ourselves, right? So the shame that we might have about having our needs met or placing limits on things. And that's, I'm laughing because I'm thinking about the profession, like this is a profession where self-sacrifice is literally worn as a badge, even celebrated. Like people will be like, I didn't even take lunch today. You know what? It's 4 o'clock and I haven't even used the bathroom, as if it's, you know, something to be proud of. That's the culture of vet med. I mean, not everywhere, not every person, not every practice, but in general. And then there's this layer that, as I said, really does not get talked about enough. And it's just like this deeper kind of current that's running behind all of that. Another big part of it is fear of other people's upset, right? So if I know, or if I believe, if I say no, that the manager's going to be upset, that my colleague's going to, you know, be pissed off at me or whatever, sometimes it's easier to just say yes than to deal with it. Like, I just don't even want to hear it. Like, fine, I'll just do it. So we're not just avoiding the conflict. We, you know, take on the extra shift. We see that extra case. We do the whatever it is that the person's asking us, because it's almost a way of trying to manage somebody else's disappointment, because we, quite frankly, don't want to deal with it. And it's easier to just abandon our own preferences than to upset someone, right? And that's real. Like, I've certainly experienced it. Most of us have. But what happens over time is that these little moments start accumulating. And that's when I refer to the inner cost, right? When the beginning of this podcast, I said, what is it actually costing you, right? Because seeing the one extra case one time, okay, whatever. You did somebody a favor. That's great. Not a big deal. But when we sacrifice ourselves, when we don't hold ourselves to be important enough over and over and over and over again, it adds up. And then there are cumulative impacts to our well-being and how we see ourselves.
Well, that inner cost is really interesting to me because, you know, I focus on the physical and emotional durability and, you know, resilience of, you know, vet professionals. And I think that there's a very real physiological response to stress. And I think that initially we've, you know, it's an uncomfortable feeling is often where we kind of just let it sit, but there's literally health consequences to stress and anxiety. And I think that all the things you're talking about here is, again, no matter whether the words that come out of your mouth are yes or no, there can be this pent up angst and stress and, you know, that internal response. So it's concerning, to say the least. It's concerning. But as you're saying, it's there's something more serious is happening than this.
Yeah, it's impacting us at many, many, many levels, right? It's not just that we are annoyed because we didn't get our way, right? It's a compounding cost that each small accommodation over time starts to chip away at something very important, as I mentioned. And it's not, again, about just like, oh, I'm tired and now I took an extra case. What we're doing is we're telling ourselves that at some level, our own preferences don't matter, right? So over time, that message starts to become almost like how we see ourselves, right? Not as somebody who chose to accommodate in a moment, but more as somebody who just doesn't have a choice, right? And so it starts to become a very powerless experience. And again, powerlessness, not having a choice, starts to take a toll on mental health. And that's where I want to distinguish accommodation as a conscious choice, right? It's very different than when we accommodate as a default. And that to me is one of the biggest keys here, because when we feel like we have no agency, really, agency is like, you know, the say over how things are going to go in our own life, we start to feel like we might be just victims to what's being imposed upon us. And then that victim energy, that helplessness, that powerlessness, that feeling like I don't have a say is what we call low vibration energy. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't help us, right? And so what happens is that's when stress starts to go up and resilience drops and mental health suffers. So when we want to start looking at all the ways that we can help burnout and what's contributing to burnout in this profession, lack of agency, lack of feeling as if we have a say or a choice in a lot of things, in my opinion, is a big factor that really I think would be served to look at a little bit more, right? Because it's not this like dramatic, like most burnout doesn't occur with this one dramatic moment. It's this slow chipping away over time. And so you add this on top of all of the other areas, I'll call it, of life that are contributing to exhaustion and fatigue. And it's just a perfect recipe for a person really not doing well. Oftentimes, what happens is that the things that are important to us, our values, what I call our deal breaker values, our non-negotiables for well-being, start to be the things that are not important to protect anymore. We're protecting things like reputation, other people's upset, you know, things that really don't really matter as far as our own well-being are concerned, and we start to let go the things that are most important. And like I said, it compounds, and there goes the little downward spiral that a lot of us experience inside the profession.
Yeah. Is there a... trying to distinguish between the idea of a preference versus an actual deal breaker. Like there's a finesse or a spectrum on there. Like what, and I think I can kind of, maybe it's easy to think like an absolute deal breaker, but there's a gray area there. Like what, walk us through that. What is that? What's the difference between those?
Okay. So I, and yes, 100%. That's a great question. And it's different for everybody. In general, when we look at what's important to us, right? So we use the word values, And then this is like a whole nother topic, but you know, values are a way of saying what's important to you. And we all have lots and lots of values, right? And you have yours, I have mine. And they're all different, and that's totally okay. We have values that are, yeah, like that's a good thing to have. Like, you know, you might look at, I don't know, loyalty and organization, and you go, yeah, those are fine, but you're just, there's not much emotion around them. You like it, but whatever. Then there are other values that are more important that you're like, yeah, like I'm really happier when I have those things in my life. Family might be one. Control over my schedule, you know, whatever. But then there's what I call the deal breaker values. And those are the things, the circumstances, the things in our life that we just cannot be with them not being fulfilled. So an example for me is kindness. Kindness is one of my deal breaker values. For me, kindness is not a nice to have. I cannot be in a situation where that is not present. Now, I don't mean in a moment, somebody's in a bad mood and we're like, oh, somebody's upset, and they say something to somebody and they storm off and we're like, oh, she just had a tough day. We'll give her a break. I'm not talking about every minute of every day, but say I was working at a practice where the manager yelled at people or belittled people or another member of leadership, or people were not nice to the animals, you know, out back. and I've seen it. Like, I cannot, even for a moment, be with somebody not being nice to an animal. And that, to me, is a deal-breaker value. And if I was forced to stay in a space where people were hurting animals, I couldn't. Like, it's just a deal-breaker for me. I would quit my job and worry about how I'm going to pay the mortgage later, if that was present. And so that's what I call a deal breaker. Like, it has to be fulfilled in order for a person to have a sense of well-being. So I consider, yeah, so that's pretty much how I would differentiate a preference from a deal breaker. Preferences, you know, I like it, but I can accommodate, I can compromise. Maybe next time I'll have my way on that one. Like, that's okay. We all compromise sometimes. And that's the difference. If we start to look at all of our preferences as deal breakers, it can start to actually, though, muddy the water, right? And that's where somebody might come across as almost being demanding or selfish, because every single thing they want has to be fulfilled all the time. And that's not what we're talking about, right? So it's just more about understanding what you are willing to compromise on sometimes and what you're not. When it comes to saying no, I like to also talk about parameters. And I like the word parameters because I'm not a big fan of the word boundaries. They serve the same purpose, but for me, from a contextual and energetic standpoint, they're a little different. Boundaries to me sound a bit defensive and like you're putting up this solid wall. A parameter is equally as strong. I consider it almost like a line in the sand that really says, I say how my life is going to go. And almost like as if there's like an invisible energy wall associated with the line, right? I say, here's how my life works. Here's how it doesn't. Here's how I will be treated. Here's how I will not be treated. Here's how I will accommodate. Here's how I will not accommodate. So it basically allows me to set these parameters without necessarily having to take on a defensive energy. And when we're not in this defensive energy, it allows us to also implement and maintain those parameters in a way that feels better, in a way that is more aligned with who we are. We can speak more nicely. We can learn to set those parameters in a way that feels kind, feels compassionate, feels like teamwork, feels like camaraderie, versus having to put up a big wall and say, oh, no, you don't. And then it almost becomes combative when those of us out there that are conflict avoiders don't feel comfortable being combative. So for me, that's just how I differentiate it. And when we get clear on those things, that's what helps. And that's really this inner work part of the podcast. This part one is about getting clear on what these parameters are, what your preferences are versus your deal breakers before you're in the moment, before somebody's sitting there waiting for an answer and you have to say yes or no.
Yes, that's exactly why the Resilient Vet podcast is mandatory listening for all veterinary professionals. So what are some things listeners can do to start assessing how this plays a role in their life right now?
Okay, so we always, on our podcast, we always like to leave listeners with something that they can do. And the thing that I'm going to leave you with today as far as what to do is not necessarily action steps, but more internal work of things to consider and take a look and explore. So it's more about, you know, maybe creating an awareness around this, because you can't build anything solid on top of a foundation that we actually haven't looked at, right? So before we go setting these parameters, we need to know what they are. So here are three places that we can start. One is to get curious about your own personal history with no, right? And if you're a person listening right now who's like, I have no problem saying no, I don't know what you're talking about, great. Maybe you actually don't need to do this. Okay. I mean, you know, nobody needs to do this. People can choose to do this. But maybe this isn't for you. But if you're like the rest of us, think about your history. Like, think back, not last week, but when you were young. What did it mean to you and about you if you said no? What did no, saying no, cost you? Right? Did you get in trouble? Did people get mad at you? What happened in your family or your school, you know, or your earliest environments, maybe a religious institution or anywhere else in the community? What happened when people drew a line about something? Like, what did you observe when other people said no? And it's important when doing this exercise to realize that we're not looking for blame here. This is not what this is about. We're looking more for like data, right? To really take a look and say, huh, where am I at with this? And when did I decide all of this? How did all of this come about inside of me? Because the patterns that we're running now in our lives, not just about this, but about everything, we wrote those somewhere in the past. And so when we can go back and find out where, then that's a helpful starting point. So step two would be to make a values-anchored list of what are your actual parameters, right? So not what you think you should be okay with, not what everyone else tolerates, but you, right? So it's different for every single one of us. What are your preferences? The things that you'd rather not, but you could be okay with. What are your deal breakers? The things that, if crossed, consistently compromise your well-being, you know, compromise your integrity and your sense of morality, and maybe even, for a lot of people, as we're seeing, their ability to even keep going in the profession. Write them down. This is not a list of complaints. It's more about getting clarity about what's important to you. And then step three would be to just pay attention to when you do say no, what emotions follow. And if you experience something like guilt, shame, you know, anything in that category, ask yourself, what is this actually telling me? So you don't have to do anything with it. This is an exercise of just noticing. So when that guilt shows up, what is the belief underneath it? That you shouldn't have, that you don't deserve it, that it wasn't okay, that you're being mean? Like, what is it actually saying? Does it mean you're not a team player? You're going to be disliked? You don't, you know, like I said, you don't deserve it. So the guilt is not truth, but it is a really important signal. It's also very unpleasant. So when we learn to read that and we learn to inquire, again, from a place of curiosity rather than judgment, that is the beginning of doing some of the inner work that can then lead us to maybe having a more empowered stance around saying yes and no. So this was part one, the inner work. And next time we're going to go into part two. We're going to talk more about actually how to reclaim your agency. what that actually looks like when we put it into practice. So if you're listening, again, please subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen. We would love that. And I invite you to visit my website and download the Wired to Say Yes self-assessment. And this will help you go through those three steps that I just identified with, you know, questions that are laid out that you can work through on your own when you have time and you're not listening in the car. So drjenniferedwards.com, that's doctor with a DR, and you can download that in the resource section. Lastly, just a reminder to everyone, if you are interested in taking any of this type of work deeper on a personal level, this is what I do. I work one-on-one as a private coach, a leadership coach, and help people to dive in and discover all of the things that are holding you back. And this is just one of the areas. And I also work with organizations and teams building cultures where people can actually thrive. So Aaron, where can people find you?
Well, first of all, thank you for the part one of this part two. So again, I want to encourage everybody to kind of check out part two. I'm waiting myself to hear what part two, the rest of the story is. But for those of you that are interested in building physical and emotional durability, that's what I do with my coaching and consulting at projectvetspan.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. Again, my name is Aaron Shaw. You can email me directly, info@projectvetspan.com. And love to help you as a support for your personal well-being in this challenging field. But until next time, join us for part two, and we will see you then.
Yeah, see you then. Don't forget to subscribe.
Don't forget to subscribe.